Jason, the Bears did something they haven't done all year, which is finish. It was ugly, but they finished. We'll talk about that more coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. It's Jason Leisure. Jason, as we sit here right now, the Bears are 12-10 winners at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. They're the first team this year to win without scoring a touchdown. They're the first Bears team since 1993 to win without scoring a touchdown, which kind of surprises me given the history of offense at this place. What do we make of it? It wasn't pretty, but they got the job done?
Man, I salute. You said they finished. I salute anyone who finished the end of this game. This was the fourth lowest scoring game of the NFL season. And low scoring football can be compelling and beautiful in its own way. This wasn't that. This was Josh Dobbs throwing them interceptions and them doing nothing with it. Justin Fields fumbling away the game and then rescuing it, cleaning up a mess of his own making at the end. What do we make of this? It's better than losing.
Yeah.
But it changes almost nothing about anything for me. I mean, you barely squeak by a Vikings team with their backup turnover-prone quarterback and no Justin Jefferson. I feel like if they'd had Kirk Cousins or Justin Jefferson, they would have won this game by 10, either one.
Okay, but this is the first winning team Matt Eberflus has ever beaten.
Yep.
The first divisional team he's ever beaten.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to throw a parade for that.
But this isn't
beating the Panthers on Thursday night, is it?
No, it's a little better than that. It's a road win against a division team, like you said, a team that has won more than it's lost. But, man, like, I don't think differently of Matt Eberflus at the end of this
than
I did this morning. And I don't think differently about Justin Fields than I did before this game.
Well, and I might have last week. If they had held on, you know, and won by 12, you know, and Fields has the game that he has, you know, Eberflus, you know, gets the four takeaways, you know, against a really good team, then you're sitting there going, like, oh, we might have something here, at least parts of something. You know, you saw it again tonight where they had four takeaways. Again, they have eight takeaways in two games. That's insane.
Yeah.
But, again, it's barely enough to help them squeak by. Lord knows Justin Fields didn't take advantage of that field position to do anything. He, you know, the Bears, it seemed like when the Bears got the ball, the momentum went away, which is not how football is supposed to work.
Last week, you mentioned the game against the Lions. No. I mean, that was the chance for a signature win. You said, you brought up the hypothetical, what if they'd won that game?
Right.
And that would have been the signature win of Matt Eberflus's time.
Mm-hmm.
Division win on the road against a very good team. Mm-hmm. The Lions are not the Vikings. I know they've been slumping lately, but the Lions are going to be the second or third seed in the NFC this year. This is unconvincing. I mean, you need to come in and beat a team like this better than that. My biggest concern, Pat, is with the offense, because obviously the defense played very well. We saw the pass rush continues to look much better with Montez Sweat in there, and they were in there on Josh Dobbs. It seemed like every dropback.
I like to call that the Tez effect.
The Tez effect or the Tez factor, TM. As Matt Eberflus likes to say.
I mean, nine quarterback hits? That's really, really good.
And even when they weren't
sacks.
Even when they weren't getting them, Pat, it just seemed like they were back there constantly.
Yeah.
Like they were constantly moving the line back toward Josh Dobbs. And they got takeaways.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. You should win that game by a lot. I'm concerned about the offense. And Matt Eberflus was hired as a defensive mind, but as a lifelong defensive coach.
Mm-hmm.
But he's responsible for the offense. He can get fired for bad offense. And all your frustrations with Luke Getsy, and I know people have them, like those need to be directed at Matt Eberflus. And inside the building, like, you know, he's the one that picked Eberflus, and he's the one that signs off on that game plan every week.
Let's walk everybody through the end, shall we?
Yes. We'll
start with a 55-yard Cairo Santos field goal on the third play of the fourth quarter. Bears have a 6-point lead. Three plays after that, Kyler Gordon picks off a tipped pass, giving the Bears the ball at the Vikings 38, up 6. You with me here?
Yes.
Bears get to the point where it's second and 10 at the 22, which means that they are in line for a 40-yard field goal at minimum. Justin Fields takes off up the middle, kind of over the right tackle. Ball slips out of his hand before it gets hit. Eberflus said he thought the defender made a nice play. Maybe he did, but he fumbled. He did the one thing he couldn't do because the Bears were lining up eventually to kick a field goal that put them up two scores.
You just had to land the plane at that point on that drive. I mean,
Yeah, and what was interesting about that was on the first play of that drive, Roschon Johnson, who the Bears leaned on a lot tonight, fumbled and recovered it. And Fields even said to Johnson in the huddle, hey, man, hang on to the football.
This is not a time to be fumbling, sir.
And then Justin does it. Vikings get the ball back, and, you know, I wrote this, but, you know, if you have a pulse and if you've seen the Bears, there's no question that they were going to go 77 yards for a touchdown. They did. They got to 3rd-and-3 once. Otherwise, pretty easy stuff all the way down the field. T.J. Hockenson catches a 17-yard touchdown pass. So the Bears now have the ball. They're down one. What does Justin Fields do? Fumbles again. Scrambles up the middle on 3rd-and-10. Loses the ball. He says afterwards he's sick to his stomach. But that felt like that was it right there. Because they're coming off the field with 3.5 minutes to play. Down one.
That would have been it. But
it should have been it.
You remember that possession the Bears had with the lead against the Lions? The late 3-and-out?
Mm-hmm.
This is that possession for the Vikings Monday night. Run up the middle for no yards, run off right tackle for 1 yard, completed pass for -1 yard, punt.
Yeah.
All of that takes place, Pat, in under a minute.
Yeah, a minute two, technically, because there's a false start in there, or there's a delay of game in there. Bears get the ball back at their own 22. All Justin Fields has got to do is march them 40-something yards and try and kick a game-winning field goal. And it looks, for all intents and purposes, like that ain't going to happen. He starts off short to Moore for 16 yards, which is a pretty nice play. Then, you know, scramble, another run, incomplete pass. That gets them to 3rd-and-10 with a minute 6 to play at the Vikings 49. So they're at midfield. They probably have got to go 18 yards.
No timeouts. There's no way you're betting on the Bears in that scenario.
Yeah, they've got to go, you know, 15 to 18 yards. Fields takes the snap. DJ Moore runs a deep in, and he's just wide open. Wide open. Huge window down the middle of the field. Catches the ball. Goes down at the 10. The 10, 9, whatever it is. Bears take a couple knees, wind up kicking a 30-yard field goal to win the game. That's a big throw. And, you know, I don't think we could say anything that changes the fact that it's a big throw.
No, great throw.
But,
great play.
But he dug himself a hole, and it is. I think we have to be careful in praising him for finding a ladder to climb out with.
I think he was pretty careful about that in his post-game press conference, and that's something that I, as a media member, and if I was a fan, I would want Matt Eberflus and Justin Fields acknowledging reality and not telling me something was better than it was. Justin Fields said, you know, if not for my fumbles, we run away with this game. We win this. It doesn't come down to that.
He says it's over. It's over.
It doesn't come down to that late scramble for a field goal with no timeouts. And he's right. And, you know, there's a pretty easy, you're bringing up, you know, 3rd-and-10 at midfield with no timeouts, a minute left, losing. Like, there's an alternate reality where they don't win this game that's very easy to imagine.
If you're live betting the game, not a sponsor, by the way, but if anybody wants to, knock yourselves out. If you're live betting that on the app of your choice, you're betting the Vikings every time, aren't you? 3rd-and-10, midfield?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, that's not a situation you see the Bears come through on a lot.
No. Fields finishes 27-37 for 217. Did not throw a touchdown or an interception. Took 3 sacks, had a passer rating of 87.3. I tell you this, Jason, the first quarter was great. He was, 12 for 12 for 100 yards? And then, as has been the case a lot lately, Jason, the Bears' scripted stuff looks great, and then their unscripted stuff stalls out the rest of the way.
That's like you always say, Pat, like build the whole offense out of that.
Yeah, make the plane either, out of the black
box. Either the
box.
First 2 minutes or the 2-minute drill, like make that the whole offense, Luke Getsy.
The defense, I think they have something. And I want to be careful how excited I get about it, because just being competent is a considerable upgrade from what we've watched for the last year and a half.
And the Vikings commit a lot of turnovers in general.
Right. I think Thanksgiving Day showed us that maybe the Lions weren't Lions offense wasn't as bulletproof as we were led to believe either. But is this Matt Eberflus's most direct path to respect is having his defense play like this, keep the Bears in the game. Then at the end of the season, if you want to have a come to Jesus meeting with him, he can sit there and be like, hey, buddy, the thing that I'm good at, we're good at.
Well, he doesn't have a lot of cards to play in this scenario.
Well, he's the defensive coordinator of a team whose defense is getting better. I mean, that's the only card he can play,
yeah,
right?
If he had to re-interview for his job right now with new management at Hallis Hall, it's a tough sell. There's not a lot of accomplishments to point to.
Right.
And, Pat, I mean, I really am not trying to, like, shoot down anything in his favor, but when did the defense get better? It got better when they got better players? When they got Montez Sweat, it got a lot better.
It also got better when Jalen Johnson came back from injury, when Eddie Jackson came back from injury, when Jaquan Brisker came back from injury, when Tremaine Edmonds, well, it may be debatable, Tremaine Edmonds could have made a tackle last week that might have changed the game, but, you know, he was flying around today. A healthy defense hadn't really been part of the equation until a week ago, right?
You've got to build it all the way around and, like, you know, a couple of years ago, 2021, they still had this very good pass rush with Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn and Akeem Hicks, but they had nothing in the secondary.
Right.
And now this year it was the opposite, where I loved their secondary. I thought this might, not only is the secondary hands down the best unit on this roster, but that should be one of the best secondaries in the NFL between Jalen Johnson and improving Kyler Gordon, a very promising high draft pick in Tyreek Stevenson, Eddie Jackson, like seeming to be rejuvenated and playing better under the new defense, and Jaquan Brisker, who we think, like, there's no problem there. And now they even have this depth with guys like Terrell Smith and Josh Blackwell, who are not stars, but they're viable backups.
I'll tell you this, Terrell Smith was pretty good. But he was pressed into action with Tyreek Stevenson out. I thought he held his own pretty well.
But you see all that going into the season, and you know that is going to be badly undercut by having no pass rush.
Yeah.
Those guys are going to have to cover for 5 seconds on all these plays, and that is near impossible in the NFL. So now the pass rush is there a little bit.
Right.
And suddenly the secondary looks a lot better. Opponent completion percentage goes down. Turnovers go up. Like, that's great for them, but if I had to pick one thing to put that on, it wasn't Matt Eberflus manufacturing a solution with Yannick Ngakoue and DeMarcus Walker. It was Ryan Poles went and spent a 2024 second-round draft pick to bring in a serious pass rusher in Montez Sweat. It's all been positive for them on defense. Eberflus wasn't hired to be a defensive coordinator in the way that Matt Nagy was hired to be kind of the offensive head coach.
But they both got to the same point when Matt Eberflus had to start calling plays. And the reason he started calling plays is, again, maybe a problem of his own making. But when he had to take over for Allen Williams, whether or not he was hired to be the CEO or not, he's the one calling plays.
I like him as a defensive coordinator, and it seems like you do too.
I'm starting to think that I can see the bones of a pretty good defense. The other question I want to ask is, 2 years ago, if Matt Nagy's team is mediocre the way it was, but if they're scoring 31 a game,
good at the thing he's supposed to be good at,
does that change your opinion of Matt Nagy? To me, it would. To me, you'd sit there and be like, oh, you got the offense part. You know, where to me it went downhill was their main problem for years and years and years that he could not fix was the quarterback position, and he was a quarterback guru, allegedly, who had come from coaching the best quarterback walking the earth. And I'm not building a statue of Matt Eberflus. I'm saying that, to me, I think the best argument he can make to keep his job is if his defense keeps doing this.
Well, they'd have to keep – there's 5 more games left. And if you are Ryan Poles, Kevin Warren, George McCaskey, and you are looking for a reason to stay with him
– I suspect they might.
As the Bears historically have. They have historically been patient to a fault. Then you latch onto that.
Is that a bad thing to latch onto?
It's not a bad thing to latch onto, but I don't think it's enough. And I think that especially if you need to reboot at quarterback, which might not entirely be a judgment on Justin Fields as much as it is a judgment on who's available in the draft and how high you're picking, it would be really dicey to me to keep the same staff in place with a new quarterback. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't work out, then you're again doing what the Bears have done a bunch, is hiring a new staff, but they cannot change the quarterback.
Having a rookie quarterback get his head coach fired is something that happens more often than you'd think.
It happened Monday.
Yeah, but this is what I'm getting to.
Sorry.
It happens Monday. Jeez, who are you, Potsy, cutting off my nice transition? Monday, Panthers fired Frank Reich. Chris Tabor, friend of the program, takes over as their interim coach for the next 6 weeks or so. They're a mess, and they are also every Bears fan's favorite, least favorite team.
Oh, they love them.
Because they have the Bears draft pick. You were telling me today that you thought just a move away from inertia scares you a little bit, because this might give them might give the Panthers a little boost.
Well, what scares me the most is that I grew up in Chicago and I've seen the Bears my whole life.
Right.
And there's just so many times where it doesn't go the way that they want it to go.
And long before you were born, the Terry Bradshaw coin flip,
it's really more just kind of that doomsday Bears feeling than anything else, than thinking the reason that I'm fearful for the Bears that the Panthers might win some games is because are they in the worst division or second? They're in a horrible division.
To quote John Fox, it's all bad. There are five good teams in the NFL. Everybody else sucks.
Well, they could win, as bad as they are, like, they could win any given week against a team in their division. I think they play
Arizona
or somebody at the end,
I'm
too.
I'm doing what Bears fans do every week, which is I'm looking up Panthers schedule 2023. Right. Coming up, they go to Tampa. They go to New Orleans. They host Atlanta. They host the Packers. And they play the Jaguars, and then
I think they got one game after that. The Colts, maybe the Bucks again.
Bucks again at home.
So any of those teams,
except for the Jaguars,
the Panthers will be an underdog
in all of them.
Every single game, any of those teams, but the Jaguars could totally lay an egg and lose 12-10 to the Panthers.
So
and that's terrifying. But that hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. Let's not don't get on board with all of my pre-anxiety about this. As of Monday. Before the Bears game, I don't think the Bears game would have affected this at all. Uh-huh. The Panthers had a 67% chance to get the number one pick, which means the Bears have that.
If the Bears have the number one pick, I think you have to take a quarterback, and I think Justin Fields has got a long way to go in the last five games to make you reconsider. I don't know that tonight was not a good night for him. They won the game, so... You know, all these times, I mean, I'd be hypocritical if I ripped him too much. My story in the Sun-Times today was Justin Fields can put up stats. Now let's see him lead them to a win. He did that, as ugly as the win might be. But, you know, if you're measuring his individual performance for next year, this was not the step forward that the Lions game was.
I think if you look, this is part of what you have to factor in when you're evaluating Justin Fields and the Bears at large. If Jalen Hurts and the Eagles come in and play this exact game and win in this exact way. Mm-hmm. The conversation about it is, hey, wacky game.
Just find ways to
win. They keep finding ways to win because that'd be an aberration for them. Mm-hmm. But this is not that different than a lot of things you've seen.
No.
From Fields for 3 years and from the Bears under Eberflus for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's a problem. That's where, and I don't really want, I don't want to hear that it's unfair to compare Fields, for example, to Jalen Hurts, or unfair to compare the Bears to the Eagles. Those are teams in your league, man.
The standard is the standard.
It's not like you're in the Division III and this is Division. Right. We're talking about Division I teams. If you ever want to get to where you're trying to go, you will have to climb over the Eagles and teams like them.
I love that you mentioned the Eagles. Cole Kmet, after the game tonight, said, listen, look at the Eagles game yesterday. The Eagles did not play well, but they hung around, made a miracle field goal at the end of regulation.
Mm. You're talking about against Bills.
Yeah, then hung around in overtime and found a way to win. And he goes, you know, the talent gap between most teams in the NFL is not very wide. This is Cole Kmet talking. And some days it's just, can you hang around long enough to win? The Bears did that tonight. Kmet then said, now, man, we got to do this a couple times in a row before we can start talking about this being the start of anything. You know, he said, you know, we've won one game in a row, a lot. We've done good things and then come back and do bad things. So, you know, he's not trying to say that this is, you know, that they've climbed the mountain. But he looked at the, at maybe the best team in the NFC and said, they showed you yesterday that, you know, even when you have a bad day, you can still find a way to win.
I think you look back to the last time the Bears were good, 2018, and maybe some of those games, I'm sure, come to mind for you where they were maybe not 12-10 against Josh Dobbs, but there were some ugly ones
there. There were some Chase Daniel games. Yeah, they split two Chase Daniel games.
There were some ugly ones in there, but those were not alarms going off.
No.
Because you had seen a body of work that was a good team.
Right.
The only body of work that this team has is bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it took them, Pat, you didn't think coming into this that it was going to take them till past Thanksgiving to outdo last year's win total.
No.
And there's been a lot of bad. So a bad game where you happen to win kind of fits in with a lot of the bad. This would be, again, a lot different if you had seen a bigger sample size that showed you something else.
Before we go, I want to talk about Cairo Santos real quick. Misses a field goal at the end of the Bears' first drive. He was 19 for 20 before he missed it this year. Turns around, drills not only a 55-yarder, which tied a career high, but then the game winner at the end, which you or I might have made. I mean, pretty short kick. But still, with what's on the line, with the weight of a lot of things in that locker room on him, drives it home. We talked to him afterwards. He said, you know, when they trusted me to kick a 55-yarder after I'd missed earlier in the day, you know, he goes, I'm sitting there wondering, are they going to let me try this? And then when they do, you feel that confidence. And he said, you know, it made me more confident myself. Santos is literally the last person any Bears fan should complain about.
I don't think they do.
Yeah. I've gotten a couple tweets. For him to come back and, I mean, to me, the game winner's great. But, man, that 55-yarder is the difference in the game, too. I mean, that counts just as much as the game winner. And, you know, that's good for him for bouncing back, I guess.
We talk about some of the very, very precious few quality pieces that Ryan Pace left for Ryan Poles. We don't really talk about Cairo a lot, but Cairo is up there. I know that what he does is not as not overall as impressive as what DJ Moore does, for example. Mm-hmm. But Cairo is up there on this roster as far as how good that player is at their job.
Mm-hmm.
And, Pat, this isn't even like why they have Cairo Santos for indoor games against the Vikings and the Lions and whoever. They have Cairo Santos because that guy can kick field goals for you at Soldier Field and in Cleveland and in Green Bay in December and January.
Cole Kmet rattled off the number of outdoor games the Bears have left. He then said it was going to be cold, and I told him it didn't have to be cold, dang it. But he knows.
It's all of them, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's not something Cole Kmet came up with on his own, I presume. I presume the Bears have been talking about this, about how they are built for the elements. They are built to win at home or to try to win at home, and that the seasons are now coming to greet them. So that'll be interesting as well. Real quick, Jason, you know there's nothing I like better than a casually cursing player.
Oh, did somebody say heck or shucks? Or?
It was a bad word, but it was. I'll clean it up a little bit. Somebody asked Kmet whether those fumbles, whether it was a oh poop moment. And he started laughing. He goes, oh, big oh poop moment.
Who asked that foul mouth question?
Jeez. Someone. It wasn't me, actually. You'd be happy to know.
I'm sure it wasn't.
Yeah, but the Bears avoid maybe what would have been the biggest oh poop moment of the year had they lost? Or the second worst in 8 days. What are the two?
I mean, it would have been another collapse at the end. Even though this was not as impressive over the first 55 minutes or whatever as the Lions.
They didn't get the plane as high in this game as they did against the Lions. No.
But could you imagine, I mean, all season long, since that loss to Green Bay in the opener, it has felt shaky for Matt Eberflus.
Mm-hmm.
And you get those emails like I do from the sports books. Matt Eberflus is always at or near the top of the list when they send out odds on the next coach fired.
Again, not a sponsor, but could be. Yes.
And there are times where I feel like if the Bears didn't have this informal policy, I mean, he could have been fired after the Denver game.
Yeah.
There's been these moments where things could break bad. This might have pushed him over the edge. If they had blown this, if they had lost 10-9.
Yeah, I think it would have been unlikely, but if you're going to do it, you do it during the bye week to give the coaches an extra.
It's the bye week. There's time. This would have been a horrible loss.
But it wasn't, Jason.
Barely. It wasn't.
It barely doesn't count. Well, maybe. Maybe it counts a little bit.
And we don't know. We honestly do not know who is making the final call on that right now.
Right.
We would like to think it's Kevin Warren, because that's what we were told, is that Kevin Warren now runs the football operations.
He's in charge of the guy who runs the football operations,
but,
yeah.
You know, there's still a Hallis McCaskey in the driver's seat at Hallis Hall.
In the locker room after the game, Matt Eberflus, this was captured on ESPN, Matt Eberflus gave the game ball to the whole team, by the way. Congratulations to the whole team.
That's indecisive.
That's a lot of balls you got to get painted up, too.
That's a cop-out.
But standing on either side of him were Kevin Warren and Ryan Poles. And Kevin Warren was nodding his head with every sentence that Eberflus spoke. I'm not saying that means anything, but it's a visual that was sent out to the rest of the league tonight. Read into that what you will. That'll do it, Jason. As the people who are picking up trash grow louder and louder in the background, you will probably not hear from us this week unless something ridiculous happens. We're going to enjoy the bye along with the Bears, but we will be back to preview the Lions game next week and everything else that's going on. He's Jason Leisure. I'm Patrick Finley, and Mark Potash is far afield, but please check him out on the Sun-Times website in print or on the app as well. He's Jason. I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.